Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we journey to Durham, North Carolina, with our very special guest, Margaret Rush. And Margaret did something that's pretty amazing. She created Village Hearth, which is a co-housing situation in North Carolina, in Durham. And I'll tell you a little bit about Durham first, and then Margaret will introduce herself and tell you a little bit about herself. So Durham is a vibrant city with a lot to offer its residents and visitors. It is home to two major universities, Duke University and North Carolina Central University, as well as the Research Triangle Park, a major center for research and development. Durham is also known for its baseball team, the Durham Bulls, which were featured in the movie Bull Durham. The city has a thriving arts and culture scene with a number of museums, theaters, and music venues. So we introduce you to Margaret. And Margaret, welcome to the podcast and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate being here. So hello, my name is Margaret Rush, and I've been lucky enough to share the past 27 years with my wife, Pat McCauley. Pat moved to Durham from Flint, Michigan, and I'm a transplant from West Lafayette, Indiana. We met in Durham and chose to create our 55-plus LGBTQ-plus co-housing community here in Durham, which is a very gay-friendly city in the liberal part of North Carolina called the Triangle, Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill. Our condo-style homes on five of our 15 acres in North Durham consist of 28 individual one-story homes. They're connected in side-by-side quads, brightly colored, and are within close distance of the 2,600-square-foot common house that we share. We've been here at Village Hearth for 3 years, and I still smile every morning when I wake up and realize we really live here. There are challenges for us to learn new ways to communicate and navigate the process of making decisions with 27 other homeowners. I feel like there's always something coming up to do and something new for me to learn, which is essential to keep our minds active and engaged. Pat and I wanted to avoid the loneliness and isolation we often see as folks age and mobility becomes more difficult. In addition, we wanted to be in a community where we would have like-minded neighbors who could share resources and give and receive neighborly support. Village Hearth was a dream in 2015 when we hired our development consultant, Katie McCammett, of Co-Housing Solutions. And by 2020, we were moving into our completed homes. We are a lovely mix of folks who are well-educated, well-traveled, politically aware, partnered, married, widowed, divorced, living single, or with partners and spouses. We also are a mix of LGBTQ+ folks and folks who identify themselves as straight. All of us at Village Hearth have a special bond because of all we have seen affect the LGBTQ+ community over the decades. We have rejoiced and cried at the events we have seen in person or on TV. We have come too far to have to go back in the closet. And in a community like Village Hearth, we know we can always feel understood, respected, and free to be who we really are. Thank you.
I feel like getting up and clapping and applauding and giving you a standing ovation, Margaret. You've done something that so many people dream of doing, and you went ahead and did it. So welcome to the show. This is going to be a very interesting show. You've definitely accomplished so much. A place you created where nobody really discriminates each other, or everyone is welcome and lives equal and lives harmoniously with one another. So tell us your story of why you decided the need was there to build a co-housing development such as your development.
Well, Pat and I had decided that we wanted to live in some sort of a intentional community as we aged and hopefully be able to age in place. So this would be our last move. And we found out about co-housing, did lots and lots of research, and visited co-housing communities all over the United States, and came to the conclusion that there's certain things that were going to be essential for us as we age, and we couldn't find any community that already had those features. So we decided we're going to have to do it ourselves. So it really came from our own need for accessibility and a design that was going to work for us through the rest of our lives. And then we decided, why not ask other LGBTQ people to join us, because we love being around other folks who are queer, and we know that a lot of people are looking for what to do with their later years rather than ending up in, you know, just a general retirement community of 300 or 600 other people. We are 27 homes, and we are a mix of folks who identify as LGBTQ and some folks who don't, but we are all allies for each other, so it's working really well. The homes, we wanted to make sure they were one story, and we didn't want to live in an apartment style building. So ours are one story homes that are connected side by side in quads. Let's see. We also wanted to be in a situation where we would be managing and creating everything ourselves without having someone coming and telling us, okay, it's time to get on the bus to go to the library or something crazy like like some of the retirement communities. We said, if they want to do something here at Village Hearth, somebody just puts out the word and picks a time and says, let's gather, and it happens. So it's been really delightful that way.
Tell us a little bit about like what is exactly co-housing. Do people share like a common area, or do people have their own tasks? Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Well, co-housing is a type of intentional community where you agree to be good neighbors. You agree to know your neighbors, not get in their way or be nosy, but that we all are aware of what's going on in other people's lives so that you would know if something is amiss. If someone usually is out on their front porch drinking their coffee at 8 o'clock in the morning and they're not all of a sudden, it would maybe be time to go and check to make sure everything's okay. We wanted that kind of familiarity with each other. But we each have our own fully functioning homes, but they're smaller. The biggest home here is just a little over 1,000 square feet. And we have our smallest home is 650 square feet. So you're going to have to get rid of all that stuff you store in the attic and the garage. This is for people who are ready to downsize, get rid of the big house, you know, have to worry about the roof and the yard and all that kind of stuff, because these are condo model buildings. And then we do share a common house that's 2,600 square feet and has a beautiful kitchen that's big enough for several cooks to be in at once, and a dining room. Even though our own homes have a fully functioning kitchen, sometimes people worry about that. You not only have your own kitchen and your fully functioning home, but you have a door. If you don't want to be out and about with folks, you know, it's easy to just step back inside your house and have your solitude. It's a nice way to mix with people who love a lot of engagement, social engagement, and those who don't. The common house is the place where we gather to cook food for each other or share food, but it also has enough amenities like an exercise room and a guest room and a laundry area that you run into people quite a bit in, and make sure that you spend a little time visiting with your neighbors. In co-housing, part of the design is to make sure that you have to walk past people's houses from time to time during your day so that you have a chance to just have a nice little greeting or sit down and have a little a talk or whatever. The joke is, if you're going to go to an appointment, you better leave your house 15 minutes before you normally would, because you're going to end up having to talk to somebody along the way. And even though we're not all best friends, we are all friendly folks here.
So do you find yourself, I was going to say, speaking of friends, do you find yourself more friendly with these people because of the situation you're in than if you were in just a regular community, like a regular retirement community? Do you have a bond with these people?
Yeah, you definitely do, just because of familiarity. You know more about them. You spend more time in their presence. And we don't have garages and places where you can just drive your car in and go, walk into your house and not see anybody. You have to see people here. Parking away from the house called remote parking, even though it's not that far, you still have to walk from where you park your car over to where your house is, and you're bound to cross paths with someone. And I think because you see people just doing their daily activities, you know, sweeping their front walk or walking their dog or going to get groceries, I think we do know a little bit more about each other. And, you know, when, like right now, Pat is visiting with a sister. Her sister had to have some surgery. So everybody's been asking, how's Pat's sister? And when is she coming home? And I like that. I like that familiarity.
Oh, yeah. And are you okay, you know, because she's away?
It was very sweet. A couple of people, when Pat took off from Michigan, they came over and said, is there anything that we can do for you during the day? And that, I mean, that's really cool to have that kind of, you know, backup system.
It sure is. I think everybody strives for that. I mean, I would love, you know, in my senior years, which is fastly approaching, to live in a community such as yours, you know, that has people, you know, friends and neighbors that care about one another and do the, you know, just live together. It's kind of refreshing. And I know by looking online and reading people's posts, a lot of people look for that type of thing, but can't find it. So can you provide us like a timeline of when you got things started and where you are today and how long and what happened along the way?
Sure. We actually worked with a development consultant to kind of take us every step of the way. She's in California, so we did all of this by phone. It was before we knew about Zoom. But every 2 weeks, we had a long phone call with Katie. Her company is called Co-Housing Solutions, and she's created and helped develop dozens of these communities. And her name is Katie McCammett. So we met her and in 2015, and we had been looking at land all over Durham. And the biggest problem in most cities is to find enough land that we could build a flat, our houses on the flat instead of like an apartment building, but to find any land that's available that isn't outrageously expensive. And we just really lucked into 15 acres right on the edge of the city limit that we could get city water and sewer established here by being annexed into the city limits. So now the city is 15 acres bigger than it was because we paid our money to be annexed in so that we could get city services like water and sewer, which are really obviously essential. And now we get the privilege of paying city taxes instead of county taxes, which it was a big jump. But that was the only way we were going to be able to build a community like this and have the services, you know, have water and sewer that we needed. So that was in 2015. We actually found our land later in August of that year. As soon as we saw the land, we got it under contract right away and closed in 10 days. So we wanted to make sure this is ours. We don't want anybody else looking at it. And then for the next 5 years, we did all the things you do or a developer would normally do, but we got to do it ourselves. Get, you know, hire the civil engineer, get through the city planning commission, get through the city council, explain what we're going to do, have public meetings with the people who are going to be our neighbors soon. And we broke ground. We finally had enough money, enough people to sign with a builder in the end of 2018. So we broke ground and we moved in May of 2020. Which, if you recall, is right when the COVID lockdown was telling everyone to shelter in place.
Yes.
So we spent our first year with everyone here wearing masks around each other, not gathering inside anybody's home or in the common house together, because we didn't know what was safe, and staying socially distant. So we did a lot of things outside that first year. It was pretty wild. All our homes are owner occupied, so it's not rentals, not income property kind of situation, and that makes it better too that we are invested in these homes.
Sure. Why did you pick Durham?
Pat and I have both chosen Durham independent of each other. We met here after we both had moved for various reasons from where we lived. And we just have always felt like it was easy to build a lesbian community here. We had a really wide circle of friends. There's a lot of gay-friendly things that happen here. We have a gay men's chorus and a women's feminist chorus. You know, for some entertainment, we have a gay and lesbian marching band. We have just a lot of things that have been going on for several decades. The Gay and Lesbian Film Festival has happened in August for, 25 years, something like that. It just, Durham, as compared to Raleigh and Chapel Hill, I think Durham is just a little quirkier. We have a lot of restaurants and stores that are not big box stores. They're family owned, or a lot of really fantastic ethnic foods and restaurants here because people have moved here. We have Duke University, so this area draws people from all over the world. And it's just, it's a good, a friendly place. It feels safe. And we both just have really enjoyed living here. So that's why we had moved away and we came back to Durham to create this community.
That's great. That's really great. And you, between yourself and Pat, you did most of the work. I mean, besides the person that you hired, but it was your thoughts that created this. This is a wonderful, wonderful thing you've done.
Thanks.
Something that a lot of people just can't do. So tell us a little bit about what were your major challenges in accomplishing the project such as this? I'm sure there were so many challenges.
Oh yeah, there were, gosh. I mean, the biggest thing was finding the land. And that was, we were, like I said, very lucky because we had looked at, I don't know, over 100 pieces of property all around Durham. We called the planning commission. We had a person there who was directed to help us and to say, can we build on this? Can we get water and sewer here? Or is this in a floodplain? Is this commercial? Is it residential? As it was, we had to rezone from where we were because this land was developed for or planned for quarter acre lots. So pretty much a typical subdivision with, each freestanding house was going to have, their own driveway and garage and all that. So since we wanted to attach our buildings four in a row, and then each row of houses faces another row of houses, which is another unique thing about co-housing, they said, oh, well, that sounds like apartments to us. So we had to rezone to a different type of development. And that took some doing. Our civil engineer had to go through all those steps with the planning commission and make that happen. So we annexed into the city. We had to rezone. And then we did marketing every day, all day for several years. Gathered people little by little until we had almost all of the homes spoken for before we broke ground.
Yeah, wow. It's a lot to do.
It certainly is,
especially, finding the place. And now, are the houses or homes detached or attached?
They're attached in rows of four.
Okay.
So you have one or two shared walls on the sides. And
okay.
The houses that are at the outer edge of the four are the biggest ones with the wraparound porches and extra wall of windows, because the outside ones have, they're attached just with one wall. Mm-hmm. So that design helped in savings as we built, and it also helps with the energy costs.
Yeah.
Because Durham is pretty much serviced by Duke Power, Duke Energy. Mm-hmm. And so we all have our own little electric meters and we pay lots of money every month just for the metering fees. We tried to get them to let us combine the whole community on one meter, but
no.
It didn't fly.
So electric bills are pretty much what standard?
Yeah, ours is about 100 a month for 1,100 square feet. And we have lots of big windows. We have skylights, and there's a lot of chance for direct light to come into these homes.
Do you use air conditioning?
Oh yeah, this is North Carolina. It gets too humid.
Hot and humid.
Yeah.
Yeah, not as bad as Florida.
Central air.
Though.
No, not as bad as Florida. It's the humidity that get, you know, what they always say. It's not the heat, it's the humidity.
It's the humidity, yeah. But $100 a month with air is pretty good. Do you need heat in the winter?
A little bit. And, you know, our winters are getting warmer.
Yeah.
So you can have temperatures in the 50s most winter days here, and it can go in the 60s or 70s.
Sounds nice.
Wear shorts in January every once in a while. Yeah, we like it. I love the temperate climate, and there's just a lot of sunshine here. There's more sunshine here than where I used to live in Indiana. And that makes a big difference for me.
Absolutely. Tell us where is Durham exactly within North Carolina?
Yeah, North Carolina is it's a really wide state. It's not a long state, I guess, because from the mountains to the sea. And Durham, Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill are really basically in the center of the state. We are about 3.5 hours from the mountains and not quite 3 hours from the ocean, depending on which beach you're going to. And this is a progressive area. We have, you know, a big international airport here. We have what's called Research Triangle Park. There's a lot of companies that have their corporate headquarters here, and it's a really big research area. So we have lots of scientists, and there's a lot of work that is established here. We're getting, I think it's Apple that's coming or to get established 3,000 more more jobs. And the building boom in downtown Durham is just phenomenal. We have lots and lots of new builds of condos and apartments.
So doesn't American Airlines have their hub there, Raleigh, Durham?
I think American is out of Charlotte.
Charlotte. Okay.
We have plenty of different airlines that come through here, but I'm not sure that we're the hub, but I could be wrong. I haven't flown for some time and, you know, things change.
I thought somebody had their hub there, Raleigh, Durham, because you're near Raleigh, right?
We'll have to Google it. Yeah. We're about less than 20 minutes and we can be in Raleigh, and less than 10 minutes they can be in Chapel Hill from where we live.
So are you anywhere near downtown Durham?
Yeah, we're less than 20 minutes from downtown Durham, from our parking lot to being parked somewhere to go to a show or to go out to restaurants or go to the ballpark and watch the Durham Bulls play. Pat, when we were first looking at land, she said she didn't want to be more than 20 minutes from the Durham Performing Arts Center, the big performing arts center that's downtown. And I said, oh, we'll never make that happen. But we're about 18 minutes from there, drive time.
That's great. So you pretty much have everything. Yeah. You're in a great location. So you're not in the midst of crowds. You're in a rural area, correct?
Right. We are right on we have one side of our property borders the subdivision, and the other side borders these three little 5-acre farms, you know, very bucolic, very quiet. And it really does feel like you're out in the country, but we're just 1 mile from all the groceries and, you know, drugstores and police department, everything you could want. But we just sit out here and watch the hawks fly overhead.
That's great.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, the United States in general is very car centric. Wherever you live, except for like big cities like New York, Chicago, and San Francisco, you really need a car other than that. So where you are, you really need a car, correct?
We do. We're not in a walkable area where you could go to and end up at your favorite Starbucks. There's plenty of places to walk. But it's the one road that goes from where we live to the next major road. It's just not a walkable road. But we have a lot of people carpool here, even if you're just going to the grocery store or going to the library or going to a show. We all pile in, you know, together. We have a couple of people who don't drive here at all, and more are people who don't care to drive. You know, they could if they had to. And we're not on a major bus route, which would have been nice, but because we're older, we can use this van service. It's called Access in Durham. Most places have something like that. It's a wheelchair
accessible.
Yeah, accessible van. And I actually am using a wheelchair these days. I didn't expect that when we started all this in 2015. But I've tried every doorway, every bathroom, every walkway. I can tell you which ones are good and which ones are bad. But I use that van, that special access van, they call it, to take me to volunteering and to go to do the swimming pool for my aqua therapy and all sorts of great things. So,
do you have to pay for that?
No, it's free. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Who provides it? The city?
The city. It's a whole Geo Durham and Go Triangle is what it's under. And it's really a fabulous service.
Wow, that's great. That's excellent. So, okay. So the summers get really warm, like in the 80s, 90s?
They can, but it doesn't last forever. You know, a lot of people are so hot, but you know, it cools off at night, and it's probably August and September are the really, really hot ones. Pat and I lived in South Florida for almost a decade, so we just go, it's not as bad as South Florida.
Right. It's not as hot or humid.
Yeah. Here we're really, we get good breezes. Most everybody has a ceiling fan on their porch. And you can be outside quite a bit, even when it's really, really stinking hot out there.
Do you have a rainy season, like in the summer months? Does it rain in Florida?
Really. Sometimes you can get kind of a late afternoon thunderstorm or something, but it's not as defined as Florida is. And right now we've kind of got a drought here. We've put in a lot of plants and trees with, you know, since we moved in the last 3 years, and now we have to make sure they get extra watering when we get a dry spell.
Go figure. In the South, you have a drought. That's pretty weird. You know,
yeah. It seems to be more extreme, don't you think? Since the global warming, it's just every year it's more and more.
Yeah. It's like, it gets worse. Yeah, yeah, it's something to, you know, now I ask about climate change on my podcast usually, because climate change is a big thing. This has impacted everybody's, you know, choice of where they want to go to also, because now you have to really think about, okay, where do I want to retire to? Do I want to retire to a place where I'm going to be in a drought, where I have no water, or a place that's going to flood? Because there are certainly places that I wouldn't want to be in when the rain starts coming down, you know, and now tornadoes everywhere in the Midwest. But yeah, it's something really to think about.
Yeah. We are within about a quarter mile of the major river that goes through Durham called the Eno, E-N-O. And a lot of people go, oh no, are you in are you in danger of being then flooded if the river overflows? But we're on the high side of the river on a big bluff. So I'm sorry, it's the other side of the river that's going to get flooded. But we also had to do special things with the treatment of water here, because we are in a protected watershed area, since we're so close to the river. So we can only have so much impervious surface. We had a percentage, we couldn't go over that. And we had to make sure that all the rainwater flows through a system of drains and doesn't just erode, you know, all the dirt onto our neighbor, you know, the next one that gets down the hill from here. So very interesting.
Are you in a flood zone?
We're not on this side, but the other side of the river would be,
Oh, so that's good, too. You don't have to really pay flood insurance. So
right. That's nice.
That's a relief. You were pretty good in picking that piece of land.
Yeah. We even have a couple of parts of the build, just because we moved so much earth to get it as flat as we could. There's some areas that do actually pond a little bit of water, and so they've built what are called, I never heard of them, rain gardens, where all the plants that are, where the water tends to pool are plants that love water. They're going to soak it up faster than the grass, and it's not going to puddle. It'll be, the water gets used then by the plants. It's very interesting to me. I'm not a plant person, so it was like, wow, I didn't know plants could do that.
Right. So tell us a little bit about the local economy. Can you provide examples of what, like real estate, like in your co-housing development, what are houses going for? And give us an example of, You know, you said you told us a little bit about electric bills, that yours was about $100 a month. How about gas, electric, internet, all that good stuff?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't tell you the exact amounts of those. I should have looked them up, because everything except the electric bill is rolled up as into our HOA dues. And so those are all paid at, you know, you, through your HOA check, which is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
And but then it leaves us a little, you know, a little shy on what it really costs for water or sewer here, you know, in this particular house. But and we only got gas line into the common house. We didn't take gas to all the homes. It was going to be prohibitively expensive. But we have a gas stove and oven in the common house and a gas fireplace. So if
so, everyone has electric.
We're all electric. Yeah, stoves. Some people don't like that so much. But if we do have a power outage, then we would still have the gas in the common house. And we're going to get an emergency generator so that if anybody needs something that, you know, if it had to be something has, you know, like medication that has to be refrigerated, or if somebody's on oxygen or whatever, we're going to make sure there's a place where they can get power. Although we don't lose power here very much, knock on wood.
Yeah.
All of our lines are underground. We don't have any above ground lines here, but then, you know, down the road, if somebody hits a power pole, that would affect us. But
yeah. So
you wanted prices. Co-housing tends to be a little more expensive than traditional homes, because you're not only paying for the square footage of your condo, you're paying for a 2,600 square foot common house that we all are sharing the responsibility for, and 15 acres of land. We only cleared 5 acres to build the houses, and the rest of it we left natural, but there's still things that have to be done that cost money that way. So, and depending on where you live in the country, these prices are either outrageously high or outrageously low or whatever. But our smallest home is 650 square feet. Is the last one sold for right around $350,000.
Okay.
And then our largest home, which is 1,150 square feet, sold for about $450,000. So in this area, you could probably get a 3,000 square foot house for $300,000. So these are, square footage wise, are much pricier.
More expensive.
But co-housing tends to hold its value. That, you know, when the prices go down, they don't dip down quite as far as traditional neighborhoods. And that's, it seems to be just what all of the co-housing communities say. It's like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
To live here with the extra, you know, the extra building and things that we take care of.
Tell us about, how about HOA costs?
Everybody's favorite words. Yeah, HOA. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find my little chart because I can remember all the prices. So again, the HOA covers your, like, I'll just give you the rundown. The cable, basic cable and internet, and a lot of people don't even buy anything more than that. That's enough for them. Mm-hmm. We have to buy all the channels so that we can get the women's basketball games, because we love women college basketball. So it's cable and internet, water and sewer, trash and recycling, pests and termites. Where we are in a place where there's lots and lots of wood and a lot of trees, so you've got to have termite abatement. The common expenses of taking care of the grounds here, that's part of it. A lot of it we do ourselves, but some has to be hired out because it's just too dangerous for a 70-year-old to be on a riding mower on
it. Yeah,
you know,
who wants
places.
To mow lawns when you're
I know, who wants to do that
when you're a senior. I certainly
right.
don't.
We have a really healthy reserve fund, again, so that we don't have to have assessments if we need to redo the roofs or something. And we actually have insurance that's covered through the HOA that takes the whole, covers the outside of the building. So the whole structure, if we, you know, if it took out one of these sets of four by fire, they build the whole thing back together. The only thing you have to insure is your belongings.
The contents.
And, yeah, the contents and any kind of an upgrade that you had done. Let's say you put in a marble bathroom counter or something, you know, they're not going to give you that, because that wasn't what the original plan was. It's what they call it. They take it back to an as-built condition. And we even have an electric car charging station and free laundry facilities if you want to go to the common house to do your laundry. So
do people do that?
Yeah, actually, some people who have room for washer dryer hookup, they get their little wagon. We have these little folding wagons that everybody has. We just share them around. They go to the common house. That way they hang out, you know, have coffee, or go work on the jigsaw puzzle or read a book, you know, and it's just kind of another casual thing. And we're, most of us are retired, you know, it doesn't matter if it takes a little bit longer to do your laundry.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a great idea. So give us an idea of what HOA costs.
Oh, that's right. I didn't get the prices for you. Just a second. Okay, for the smallest home, it's $350 a month. And the largest home, it's $475 a month.
Okay, not too bad.
Considering
I pay, and mine's a little, I live in a condo, about 1,700 square feet, and we're paying in the high sixes for our HOA, which includes water, sewer, you know, roof, and all of that stuff, that good stuff.
Does it include your internet or anything like that, cable?
They did at one time, but they discontinued that. It doesn't right now. And it does include the grounds. We have a lot of grounds. We have a pool. We have a gym and a little theater, you know, inside. So, yeah. So it includes all that.
Is yours a retirement community?
It is not. No. Nope. It's just a regular condominium with three buildings. So three apartment buildings that kind of share all the common stuff.
Yeah. When people ask, you know, they call me on the phone and something about, well, tell us about your amenities. I go, they're going to be disappointed. So we don't have that.
We have gardening.
That's right. We have a lot of gardening. And we had snuck in a pool with our architect. Our development consultant said, rip it up. You're not getting a pool. I mean, not right now. You know,
right.
There's so many expenses with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So electricity bills, you mentioned water, and water sewer is included in your HOA, correct?
Yeah. So I'm not sure how.
Okay.
How
yeah. No, no worries out. About that if it's included. How many bedrooms and baths do these units come with?
We have three different floor plans. We have one bedroom, one bath, which is just a really lovely little design. You feel like you have a lot more room than 650 square feet, but that's the one bedroom, one bath. Then we have a two bedroom, one bath. That's about 1,000 square feet. And that also is a really nice design. And then the largest one, the 1,150 square feet, is two bedrooms, two baths. So it's basically a great room, which is your kitchen, dining, and living room, and then two master suites. All of our bathrooms are fully handicapped size. You can get a wheelchair in there and turn it around. You can also roll it right into the shower. We have rolling shower. So for many people, myself included, that means I can take care of all my showering, everything all by myself, because I can get the wheelchair into the shower and transfer onto a bench in there. If I have to step up a step to get into the shower, that might be not possible for me without having an aide or someone, you know, just to help me with that transfer. So it's a good design to already have that. It's a lot harder to revamp a bathroom that has too many barriers for a wheelchair. And, you know, hopefully a lot of these people aren't going to end up in a wheelchair, but if you do and you want to stay in your house till you die,
right?
It's nice to have it.
It sure is.
Thought through originally.
It sure is. And speaking of thought through and more land, since you do have some more land, did you ever think of a phase two?
We have not. Pat and I, we just look at each other and we go, we're done. Co-housing has kind of a sweet spot of how big the community should be. They say somewhere between 24 and 32 homes is usually a really good, manageable number. You want enough so that you can get the work done. You don't want so much that people are going to get lost in the crowd.
Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. It makes sense. Okay. How about access to health care? How far are you from the nearest hospital? Do you have doctors around? Do you have transportation to the hospital if you needed it? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, we're in a really good place. Where Durham is called, it has two things that claim to fame. One is that it's a city that tobacco built. That's where the Duke money, a lot of that was in tobacco. But it's also the city of medicine. We have Duke University Medical Center. Their med school is, you know, world known. And so there's lots of doctors. We are only 3 miles from the regional hospital that Duke owns, and we're only 8 miles from the original Duke hospital. There's a big VA hospital here also that veterans can use. As far as transportation, usually we just catch rides with each other if somebody doesn't drive, but that access van would take you to the hospitals easily. Or we've had to call 911 a few times for things that have happened here. And, you know, of course, they just take your way in the ambulance.
Right,
get to where you need to go.
Yeah.
But we're in a really good place for medical schools because UNC at Chapel Hill also has their own medical school. And Wake Forest University, which amazingly is not in Wake Forest, North Carolina, it's in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, but it also has a medical school.
But that's awesome to have so many medical schools.
Yeah.
Because that's a good place to be, you know,
it is.
In that area. So
yeah, Duke
do you,
Duke
do you
well
think
known.
There's enough doctors for the amount of people in the area? Do you have long waits for some medical issues?
Oh, that's a good question. I have not found there to be long waits. I feel like most everybody, if you need, they have so many levels of care now. You know, you can go to an urgent care, you can go to the emergency room, you know, if you needed something in the moment. But usually if I have a referral to a specialist, you know, I'm in within a couple of weeks, and I haven't had something that's urgent and, you know, needed to be taken care of right away. So I don't know about that.
Not quite.
But the people here who have, we've had a couple of broken feet, we've had some hearts, you know, cardiac scares, we've had a few things, you know, they get in the next day for consult that they
emergency,
go through the emergency room or through an urgent care, you know, that kind of thing. So
good. Yeah. As long as it's a quick turnaround. You know, sometimes you hear of places where, oh my God, I had to wait 3 months for medical care, which,
yeah,
that's an important factor also besides climate change and medical care. Healthcare is probably one of the number one things.
Mm-hmm. That's what we hear.
You have to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So that's a plus. So I guess everyone helps one another in the community we discussed. Does everyone have like a chore?
We do. I don't know. People call them different things, you know, a job or a task or, you know, whatever, duty. Everyone here has to find their niche. What do they like to do? Do they like to go out and pull weeds and haul mulch? Then that's a great place for them to be. Maybe they want to be the person who makes the phone calls to find out what's the best person to come and, you know, touch up paint on something or to do some work on the houses or the roofs or things like that. Or they like to cook. And we've got folks who absolutely love to cook for usually probably 24 of us show up for a community meal. You know, that, oh, I can cook for 25, 30 people. No problem. It's like, not me. And so there's finance and legal, and people have that bent, or we have facilities and maintenance. So, you know, when the light bulb goes out, that's up, you know, on the ceiling, and you've got to have somebody with a big ladder get up there. We're not getting up on ladders.
Or the smoke alarm that's chirping.
I know.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, so it's really it's nice to have the people that you go to, and I, because I like to talk and I'm a people person, I'm usually the one who fields phone calls and emails and starts that process with folks. We just happened to have some homes that were recently for sale, so there was quite a bit of flurry of activity, people wanting to come and visit the community, and that was kind of fun. I think we've got one home still that hasn't had an offer on it, but it's usually homes in co-housing don't usually go through the MLS. Usually they sell by word of mouth and through our own networks.
What's the square footage that's available right now?
Just it's tell an, our it's audience. It's an 1150 square foot. And that one has, the price is over $500,000. They done some really major upgrades. I'm not sure what all they've done, but things that are, really, if that's what you like, you're going to be really happy that your house has that.
You hear that? You hear that, folks, listening audience?
Right.
There's one available, so
one available.
Get in touch with Margaret or myself, and I'll get in touch with Margaret.
Absolutely, yeah. People who moved in, especially our first round of people, 75% of us were from all over the country, not North Carolina.
Right.
It was very interesting.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can definitely imagine. That's great. So the HOA is self-managed. There's no management company, so you guys just do everything.
We do, and we're prepared at some point if we can't handle everything, then we will hire professionals. I mean, we have, we have an attorney, we have an accountant, we have people to go to now, but there'll be a point possibly, or the next people who have just bought or are buying in right now are a little bit younger than those of us who are here right now. Most of us are in our late 60s, early 70s who are here from as the original folks that moved in. And so some of the new folks are closer to the 55, 60 years old. It's like, yeah, they're youngins.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Their brains still work.
So do you have a board or is everyone on the board?
Everyone's on the board. We all have equal voting power for anything that involves the whole community. So
do you have a treasurer?
We do have a treasurer. You have to have a treasurer,
president.
A secretary, a vice president, and president.
Yeah.
Even if it's a name only, you have to have those for condos in North Carolina.
Okay. So does the treasurer, is his job, does he keep the books of the HOA and make sure everybody has, is in balance? And is he responsible for all the bills and all that stuff?
Yeah, there's several people on that team. Some take care of that, making sure the HOA dues get paid, and others do, some of the other bill paying and managing. So it's kind of good that there's little checks and balances on that also. Sometimes it's like, where's the checkbook? One of those great big ones, where you write all the information.
Since you're all neighbors and you're all on the board, what happens if somebody's late on their HOA fees? Does it kind of get a little weird?
I think there is a penalty written into our bylaws, agreements, whatever.
Yeah.
That has, and I literally don't know because that's not one of my jobs. I don't know if people are late or not. Almost everybody has things that are automatic payments now, so you can't really get into too much trouble. I mean, even if we all share pizza and somebody wants to give you some money, they go, what's your account? I'll send it to you. They don't want to deal with money.
I'll sell it to you.
Right. That's exactly what happens. It's so funny.
Okay. All right. So let's say if someone sells their home, of course you can't limit it to the LGBTQ community because that is discrimination too. So how do you go about keeping up the whole infrastructure of co-housing for LGBTQ people? How do you get most of your people as LGBTQ?
Well, we have done lots and lots of marketing that is for the, in LGBTQ places like the Gay and Lesbian Review or Washington Blade and various things like that. Also, there's this little kind of grassroots magazine called Lesbian Connection that actually several of the folks who moved in here heard about us first that, besides doing a lot of local advertising. But what you find out is people kind of self-select. They may say, oh, co-housing, it looks kind of interesting. They may come, but, they're going to see rainbow flags all over the place. And, we have not a whole lot of couples here, but we do have, couples who might be holding hands or whatever. You have to just be, it has to be somebody who is perfectly comfortable with with this situation. I mean, it's not... my age group people, you didn't get to hold hands in public. You didn't get to go, you know, kiss your sweetie when you sat down at a restaurant. You know, you meet each other. You even watch the terms of, you know, words of endearment that you would say to each other. But Pat was a teacher, and oh my God, people always love to target gay teachers and try to get rid of them. So, I mean, we're so careful. So just to know that you can, you know, you can say what you know, things the way you want to say them, and you can act the way you want to act is amazing. But most people, they either are identified somewhere in the LGBTQ, I think it's like a spectrum now, or they're comfortable because they're a direct, what we call a direct ally. They've got a sibling, a parent, a child, someone very close to them who is in queer. And so they understand, you know, they've seen what we've all gone through over the years. And we really push hard with the idea that, yes, this is why we put LGBTQ on our community. It's like, we want everyone to be comfortable here. We want people to have their relationships be honored and respected. And we don't want to be in any situation where we have been many times in our lives, where we've been ridiculed or we've been laughed at or we've been this or that. We don't want anything like that here, and we have not had that. So it needed to be people who have an open heart and an open mind, and this is, you know, these are the people who are going to be comfortable here. I tell people they need to come here and stay for a couple of days. You know, sit down and talk to these people. Are these people you want to spend the rest of your life knowing about? Do you find them interesting or clever? If you don't, if these aren't your people, they're not your people. Right. And then there's another community somewhere that, you know, will fit your needs, whether you're, you know, you belong in the LGBTQ, you know, space category. And people, you know, self-identify. So I never go up and say, well, which one are you?
Right.
Yeah. But you're right. So we kind of target, I mean, I guess we're kind of stalking people. If we meet some people who've come to some of our Zoom classes and things, you know, you find some people who say that they just seem like they would be a good match for us. Mm-hmm. And some people are not. You know, if somebody wants, you know, a lot of the services, you know, taken care of by, you know, concierge or something, this ain't the place.
You know? Right, right. If you have Facebook, log into, I have a Facebook group called Where Do Gays Retire? I started that when we moved from New York to Florida and kind of was thinking maybe Florida wasn't the right place. So I started this group, Where Do Gays Retire? And it started out, you know, not too many members, 50, 100. Now we have over 12,700 members.
That's amazing.
So, and that's why I started, because there was a need. That's why I started the podcast. And, well, it's also interesting for me because I find it fascinating to meet people of different walks of life all over the country, all over the world, I should say, because we are, you know, global now. So I do interview people from all around the world. So yeah, if you have Facebook and you join that group, Tuesdays we allow businesses to advertise. So you're more than welcome to advertise your co-housing, your heart's
village. Okay, awesome. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you for the tip.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, it's like I remind myself of the Golden Girls, only you're not sharing one place. You're kind of sharing this whole community, which is kind of cool. You know?
It is. And whenever there's something that anyone needs, we are very, very good at, you know, jumping in and making sure that people are taken care of. When somebody fell off a ladder and broke his ankle, you know, by the time that they had gotten to the emergency room, you know, we'd already planned, you know, who's going to bring dinner the next few nights for for his spouse, and who's going to take care of their animals, and who's going to make sure that if the spouse wanted someone to go to the hospital at a certain time and she couldn't do it, then we would make sure someone else did it. So It's like right now we've got somebody who's recovering from a broken foot and some surgery, and people are walking her dog. They're making sure that she gets a meal, you know, once a day, that somebody brings a homemade meal or what. It's just automatic here. You know to jump in and make sure that people are okay. But you also are willing to step back when people go, no, you know, don't hover.
I don't need. Right. Stay away.
I know. And we've been so, so careful about COVID. I mean, anyone who's traveled, when they get back, they really self-quarantine and take a couple of COVID tests until they're sure that they haven't mm-hmm. brought something back with them. And right. that to that end, we've been very healthy here.
That's
COVID-wise.
Great.
And
that's so good.
Because fabulous.
Everybody strives for that type of retirement community, you know, where everyone helps each other. And just the thought that, I could be in a care facility where I have to go back in the closet. I don't want to do that with all the years that we spent trying to get out of the closet. Oh my God. It's like, you know, it reminds me, Margaret. So like when we started our journey, my husband and I, so we met in 2000, we started off as domestic partners. That's what they called it back then, as
yeah.
we remember. So, and then as time went on, and the years kind of like, they get kind of fuzzy in my mind because it's been so long. Then all of a sudden they said, okay, now we'll let you do a civil union, because civil union was, you know, civil union. So we got civil unionized. So we were civil unionized in Connecticut. And so we moved from Connecticut to Florida before the federal mandate that, you know, gay marriage would go through, and it was mm-hmm. federal, it was recognized by the federal government. So what we actually did was, we in Connecticut, civil union became marriage, but it wasn't marriage everywhere. So when we got married in Connecticut, and when we moved to Florida, we were no longer married.
Oh yeah.
That was crazy. And then, but in the back of our mind, we knew, okay, if we're going to be there, the federal government's going to do it. At that time, we kind of knew that they were about to do it. So mm-hmm. I said, another year, they'll do it. And they did. So I went from civil union to marriage to not married, back to married. So it's just so confusing when somebody says, when did you get married? I'm like, which one? Is it civil union or married? Or because we had our reception on our civil union. So
yeah.
So it's so confusing. And who the hell wants to go back to that?
Oh, it's just terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we got married in right before the gay marriage came into North Carolina. We got married in Maryland because that was a place close enough in the DC area for our friends to come up. But it was the joy of walking into that courthouse and just, you know, saying we want a marriage license and having people say congratulations was absolutely phenomenal to me. It still gives me shivers that's the way things were. And then, I mean, North Carolina is just so crazy. I mean, we're the ones who had that stupid bathroom bill about for transgender folks. It's like, who's going to monitor that?
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
It was so cruel. And
so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But and we fought. We come so far. And, you know, we're not going back. You know, we're not going backwards. So
it's very scary.
Kudos to you, though, for making life a little bit more pleasant for people in this world. So you did a good thing. Absolutely.
Thanks. Well, I'm just thrilled because we wanted a different kind of, you know, golden years or whatever than we saw our parents go through. And, you know, they stayed in the, you know, they got to keep the family house, you know, even though it was only just my mom left the last 12 years or so. And it's like, I know she was lonely, but she didn't, you know.
Yeah.
That's just the way she chose to be. And we find that we're a better couple when we're around a community.
Yeah, I think
life
community is so important.
Richer. Yeah,
it is.
It's just it's more fun. It's more interesting. I'm the extrovert. I need to go out that door and see what people are doing, even if I'm just sitting on the porch. And Pat's the nester. She loves, she can stay inside for a long time. She gets everything settled around her recliner and does her work. And, yeah. So it's a perfect place for us to be, especially the fact that I'm not driving because of the wheelchair. So.
Yeah. I think community is so important. Even here in Phoenix, we have our own little, we're in our own little kind of gay bubble. The community where we are. So, we are fortunate to make a lot of friends. We're not in your situation where, you can rely on people. We do have some neighbors that we are very friendly with that would, do anything for us, and we would do anything for them too. But it's so important, I think, just to, as you grow old, and if you want to retire in place, to find a place where you could retire in place with feeling totally comfortable. So very good. Very good. Do you have to be 55 years old or older?
We have to have, the 55 plus is actually a legal definition, and we have to have, in 80% of our homes, we have to have at least one person in that, each home, who is 55 or older. Okay. So that means in 20% of our homes, we don't have to have that, which is about 5 homes, if we had younger folks.
Okay. But you would say the majority is...
Yeah, most everybody is 55 or is in their 60s, and we've got some people in their 70s, and they run rings around the rest of us. They're the oldest people on the on the land are the ones who are so fit and energetic. It's like, can we bottle that?
Yeah, please, absolutely. So, do you have? You were talking about the amenities and stuff. Do you have high speed internet in your homes?
Yeah, we do. And some people have put in, I don't really understand about these things, but some, they put in their own Ethernet, whatever that is, that seems to be like it never goes out or something. But the internet is, it's fine for everything that we do. And
that's good.
We get a lot of, get lots of TV shows and ball games and stuff that we
and
enjoy.
That,
so
does that come in, is that included in the HOA, did you mention?
Yeah, the cable and internet.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good because I pay separate for those as well.
Right.
So on top of mine.
Yeah. And even if you wanted more of the, the premium channels, you still have the basic because that part's already covered. So you just pay the add-on fees. So, So that's a nice plus.
Do you allow pets? Because we have two.
You have two?
We have two. Yeah. Do you allow, do you restrict for size or?
We don't. We have pets. We, at one time we thought maybe 3 pets, combination cats, dogs, whatever would be, we would ask you not have more than that. One person moved here with 4 pets and now the two of them have died. It's like she had all geriatric animals apparently. So yeah, we dogs, there's no restriction other than the Durham leash laws, which means anytime your dog is outside of your house, it's supposed to be on a leash. And we one couple has a very tall German Shepherd and a Great Pyrenees, which is those big white dogs, and a cat. And 2 women, and they live in the smallest size apartment, or smallest size condo.
The 600.
So there's no telling, what people want. But we have very smart dog owners here. They have made sure that their dogs are introduced to each other in appropriate ways, and we don't hear aggressive growling and hardly ever hear barking here. And we have 9 or 10 dogs in the community.
I think that's great because some communities, their restrictions on size. Now that really presents a problem for me because let's say you have, like we have a lab, she's so sweet. She's 85 pounds, but she's the sweetest dog in the world. She would never harm anybody. Yet you have these little tiny dogs that are quite aggressive and they're rah, 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 and my lab is the calmest dog in the world. And then you have this little thing that may not be calm. So Why restrict because of size? Size really doesn't matter in this case.
Yeah, it's temperament and, you know, what animals are trained to do. It's quite interesting to me, that idea. And the cats, again, we ask that cats remain indoors to kind of for the safety of the cats and the safety of the songbirds. But a lot of people moved here with cats that were indoor-outdoor cats, and those cats are going to be miserable if they never can go outside and roam. So they go outside and roam. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if your cat gets picked up by a hawk or something, you know, it's like, I'm sorry.
Sorry, we can't do anything with a flying cat.
I know. And some people have screened in their porches so that their animals can be out in the air, but, you know, not unsafe or running around free. So that works out pretty well.
That's cool. Are there any recreational centers nearby? Can you go and have fun at a place? Or
we are in an excellent location for that, because probably, let's see, it's about as far as the hospital is. What did I say? Three miles, you know, 7, 8, 10 minutes. We have a wonderful Parks and Rec recreation center. I actually haven't been in the recreation part because I go to the pool. It has a separate aquatics complex that has a beautiful pool that's very well maintained. It is indoors, so you can use it all year round. Mm-hmm. And a whopping $3.
Oh my God, that's great.
You don't have to buy a membership. You don't have to, you know, do anything, make a reservation or anything. I just roll in.
That's awesome, though.
And yeah, and it's open from like 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. or something. It's tremendous. And there's two of those kind of complexes in Durham County, and they're just run by the County Parks and Rec.
That's so awesome.
I'm not sure what all they offer at the recreation center, but I'm sure there's, you know, place for usually the tan ball or pickleball and basketball and those kind of things. But I couldn't swear by that. But I'm tickled to death that it's only $3. That's because
that
I'm a great senior. It'd be $4 if I wasn't.
Oh boy, that's wonderful. That's great. That's
I love
awesome.
Not having to get a membership. We do have a YMCA that has several branches, and it's very, very nice. But at one time, they wouldn't accept same-sex couples as a household, as a family. So you had to buy two individual memberships instead of paying for one family one. And I don't know if that has ever changed. But that was really, I mean, aggravating to many of us.
Yeah,
but
they should get over that.
Yeah, the facilities at the Parks and Rec Aquatic Center are much better than the Y has anyway, so I'm very happy to do
that. That's great. How about arts and culture? Do you have enough arts and culture in the Durham area?
I feel like we do. We have some wonderful museums, but since we're here at the university, there's so much live music and theater that is, you know, student-based, that's, you know, practically free or cheap. And then we have quite a few professional, either local theater troops, or, you know, that we have the Broadway shows, you know, that on tour, they come through the Performing Arts Center.
That's awesome.
So that's just, there's so much to do here. If you don't find something to do, then you're not looking. There's so much theater. I just love it. It's very good quality, with quite a few different independent theater troops and venues. And we have all summer long, we have the American Dance Festival that's been around for 40 some years. I don't know anything about dance, but names that I even recognize of the choreographers who are here for the summer. And that's, again, another fantastic chance to see these people that you wouldn't normally see. And then in Raleigh, North Carolina Symphony is a very, very, very good symphony. And so we've got them, and there's some semi-professional choruses and things like that, if you really like the, you know, more of the highbrow, you know, operas and, you know, things that have orchestras and people singing all at the same
right.
time. There's a word
like
for
chorus.
That. Apparently, I'm not finding it.
That's fine. The choruses or...
Yeah, but, chorus and instrumental. And.
But you won't get bored.
No. If you're bored, then it's your own fault.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the restaurant scene. Do you have good restaurants?
Oh, fantastic. What I love is so many of these kind of little hole-in-the-wall family-owned restaurants. You know, it's everything's not just the national chains. Mm-hmm. And that's
great.
We have so many folks here who either eat vegetarian or tend towards that. And we've mm-hmm. also had one or two people here who are vegan. And they say there's plenty of restaurants that they can get food that's served appropriately for them. And then we have, you know, DoorDash and all that. You can have it delivered to your door. It's way too easy.
So the restaurants, you have some good restaurants that are, again, like 3 miles away from you, or?
Yeah. There's several that are just 1 mile away. Of course, there's pizza everywhere because it's a college town.
Right.
But
college towns usually have pretty good choices of everything.
Yeah, a lot of Asian kinds of foods, all sorts of different, you know, Thai and Chinese and Japanese. But then there's a lot of African-based foods and then a lot of like Mediterranean kind of places. So
nice.
And then, typical, Italian pizzerias and,
Mexican.
Right. And we do have a lot. We're getting more and more Mexican. We have a really steady stream of food trucks. They have food truck rodeos and gatherings quite a bit. And people, you can look online and find out where your favorite food truck is going to be on what day.
That's great. I love that. That's so good. Good. Food's very important. Very important.
It is. Absolutely.
Tell us about crime and safety. Do you have any crime, so to speak?
Well, we do. When I moved to Durham in 92, 94, something like that, it was actually called the murder capital at one time.
But really?
Wherever I have lived, I feel like there's been a nice mix of, socioeconomic. It's, it's not like all the rich people live over here. It's like everything is, there's historic houses right next to little box houses and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest problem that I personally have ever had is car break-ins. Either you didn't leave it locked or that somebody broke a window and got in there. And we have had that once or twice in the parking lot here, but it was mostly doors. People hadn't locked their doors at all. So what was stolen was they didn't even have to break a window.
Right.
And I've always had a gay rainbow or something on my car. And I've not had issues with that either, which is kind of neat. You see the neighborhood, not just Village Hearth, but the subdivision we're close to. There's probably on every block, there's one or two gay flags flying right now. And
that's so nice.
I really love that. And there's quite a few people who, always have something identified on their cars. Even our cars that are sitting on there right now, a lot of them have Human Rights Campaign or some sort of a rainbow array on them. And I think it's important. I think it's important to be seen and be seen in numbers. And
do you see the pride flags other than Pride Month? We're in Pride Month now. So.
We are in Pride Month. And in fact, we just got a little shout out when they did an interview with us from MSNBC about aging in community. And, they tape you for 2 hours and they use, 90 seconds. But
I want to still see it.
Yeah, I'll try to remember to send you the link.
Okay.
It's pretty cool.
And then I can put it on the show notes to the podcast, too.
That'd be great.
And people could, absolutely.
I don't know where I was going with that. Let's see. Oh, Pride Month. Yeah. And Durham, for some reason, has always put their pride in September when the Duke students come back, because we have the Pride Festival is on the Duke campus, and it's just better if the students are there to just stay, in numbers is much more fun. But they put gay flags all down the main drag in the Duke campus for Pride, for the Pride Day or weekend or whatever it is. And I just my heart just goes, I just get all excited because it's so nice to see people where it's safe and they're proud enough to say, look, we are, this is our household and this is who we are. And I feel like that's what we've done with Village Hearth. We've always said that we were LGBT, and now we're adding the Q.
Yeah.
And some places who started co-housing communities might start with that, you know, saying, oh, LGBT, and then they kind of get, well, we're friendly, we're welcoming, you know, they do that. And we've always just used the words and the gay rainbow, and that feels really good to be able to be authentic.
Does. Yeah. Definitely. So what would you say to our listeners if they're thinking of living in an LGBTQ plus community, especially something like Village Hearth?
Go with the idea that it's just going to feel so much better to be where you don't have to guard anything that you say or do, and that it's accepted that your relationship and the way you live is as legitimate and as, honored as anything else that we honor all those straight couples all the time, everything romantic. But, Hallmark has a couple of cards that are women for women and men for men. And, it's slow going. But I think anyone who hasn't been in that situation where you're around almost all folks who are gay, I think you'll be surprised that everything's just easier. You can kind of breathe a little easier. And you can also talk almost in shorthand about some things. If you say anything about the quilt, well, what do we know we're talking about then? And people will say, when they saw the quilt, when they made panels for it, the friends that they lost, those are things that are kind of universal, no matter where you were. I mean, I lived in the Midwest where you don't even talk about anything, and half these people are from the one coast or the other. But there's some sort of immediate family feeling when you know what some of those things did, like don't ask, don't tell. How bad was that for us? So I like that. That much of that is shared. Although we share, I learned something from anybody of what their experiences were with some of those things that happened in the United States, or what was it like? Could you ever be out?
Right.
And if you were out, if you came out, could you stay out?
Right.
Some people, lost their families, lost their friends. I mean, it's many of us are alone. And another thing with a gay community, most of us are childless. Thus, we don't have children and grandchildren to come visit us.
So. Right, or take care of us as we age.
Yeah. So who do you want taking care of you? The government saying this is how much money you have, so you have to live in this nursing home. It's like,
I would feel like if I moved into a place like that, like there would be like this burden off my shoulders that I could just be myself, my authentic self wherever I was, and not being afraid of, just doing anything that I wanted to do, normally speaking.
Yeah, it feels very good. And I've always joked that if we ever had any prowlers or anybody out here, in the middle of the night or whatever, it's like people who are our age don't sleep through the night very well. There's always going to be somebody who's
up watching. Yeah. Keeping an eye out. So tell our audience, could we find you on social media anywhere?
You can. You can find us on Facebook, just Village Hearth Co-Housing. If you Google us anything LGBTQ retirement, we're going to be one of the first ones that come up. If you remember that we're in Durham, North Carolina, again, anything that can put LGBT and retirement in Durham, you're going to find us right away. Our name is Village Hearth Co-Housing, and that is our email address, villagehearthcohousing@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we have a website, villagehearthcohousing.com. Okay. And send us an email or give us a phone call, and you're probably going to get to talk to me.
That's great. Just like I did.
Right. And I think there's going to be more communities sprouting up around the United States, because we have had so many people ask us, how did you do it and how can you tell us to do it? And I say, well, we'll tell you our stories, but get a professional who knows what
to help.
Doing
to tell you. Yeah. Absolutely. Very important. Margaret, thank you so much for being a guest. This was so enlightening, so much fun. I learned a lot from you. I think you did something that, nobody or very a small amount of people have done. It's a great accomplishment, and you should be proud of what you did and proud of the community. I'm proud of you, and I'm proud of the community.
Well, you have to come to the East Coast sometime.
I'll have to visit.
And visit us. Well, thank you. And again, I'm the only one who is speaking today because Pat is involved with her family. Yep. And on the road right now. But, you know, it took both of us. I mean, she's the one who does the detail person, and I'm the people person. So
thank you, Pat.
Pretty well. Yes. Thank you, dear.
Thank you, Pat. All right, Margaret. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much. And we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you. It was great to meet you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.